Cheers, we're having a little beer here.
I'm having a Guinness, and you're having a
Miller. It's the kind of only beer I drink, and Brahma, the
Brahma,
Brazilian beer.
Yeah, I know,
yeah.
Do you stick a bit of lime in it?
I would if there's lime there, but usually I couldn't give a shit. Like, I'll just drink it, like,
you know. Not too fussy.
No, not too fussy. So, listen, I wanted to talk to you. We got a few comments from the intro episode that
we got a few comments,
released.
Didn't we? Yeah, it was good.
We haven't really pushed it so much because we want to wait until we have a few more. But a good few people, including myself, want to know more about you and your background, the stented papa, where that came from, where the whole stented side of things came from. Because I originally thought, and I mentioned this before, that it was the scented papa, and then someone else mentioned the same, and it's not. And I thought you were like a perfumery or something like that. But obviously,
potpourri papa.
Yeah, potpourri papa. But stented papa. So from what I know from talking to you, and we've met a few times now, you had stents put in your heart at 36, so maybe you
actually,
could tell us about that.
Well, actually, recently I keep saying 36, and it was 37 actually.
Right, okay.
But I when people ask me what my age is, I go, I'm 42, and then Mel will be looking at me, she goes, but you're 41.
Yeah.
So I'm at that stage now, I'm just mixing up.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's usually women who lie about their ages. Not
yeah,
me.
I know. There you go. Yeah. Huh?
So
37. Yeah, it was going on for a while, in the sense of what was going on for a while. I was having bad feelings inside the sort of the chest area. was going for runs every now and again, trying to keep a bit of fitness up, like doing maybe 3, 4, 5K. And every now and again, I kind of feel this like a little, it's like a stitch, but it was in the ticker area, or in that kind of area there, you know. But I just kept on brushing it off, thinking, young, healthy fella, you know, there's not anything untowards going on here. But it kept on going, and every now and again, and then I was getting palpitations, like mad palpitations at times, like really keeping me awake at night kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
Or if I'm asleep, it would wake me up. So
what, your heart just beating
the heart
so fast?
Just, yeah, it's just beating boom 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 boom, and you know your heart's beating, you don't need to feel it.
Yeah.
But like, this was so,
you can hear it as well.
It was, yeah, but it was just like, it was when I was doing nothing, it was when I was walking around. It was pretty much always there. Then what happened was, I think I described it in the intro just very briefly, but imagine you have a balloon in your hand and you've got longer nails and you're squeezing like that as if you're trying to pop the balloon.
Right.
That was the sensation that was going on in here.
Well, was it painful then? Or just
it was freaky. Yeah. It was freaky, if I'm honest. It was very uncomfortable, yeah. I wouldn't say painful, just really disturbing. You know, because you're thinking, what the fuck is this? Like, you know, that shouldn't be going on. Especially when you're thinking like 30 odd, you know. And so here's the thing, it's in the genes of the family on my dad's side. Like, dad had a, I think it was a triple bypass, it could be quadruple. He's had 2 or 3 stents put in since. He's had 4 or 5 mini heart attacks, 2 big probably heart attacks.
Japers.
All his brothers and sisters have all had it, bar one. My granddad, who died when I was only 5, I think it was, but he had a heart attack. And I'm guessing, that's all I know, I'm guessing the history goes back probably even further than that, you know. So like, I knew it was going to happen at some point. It was in the post. But in my head, I was thinking, 50 odd, 55, you know, then it'll cop on. But when I hit, you know, 36, 37.
Wow, that's young, yeah.
It was young, yeah, it was very young. And so I suppose what brought me to actually go in and get, you know, I went to the doctor and I explained about the palpitations, and then she took bloods and the cholesterol came back. She said, your cholesterol is too high for your age. She said, do you drink? I said, yeah. She said, do you smoke? And I said, I don't anymore, but I did. I said, I'm actually off them 8 years. I'd have the odd fag every now and again if I'm out, but I wouldn't go buying them during.
Meaning, say, cigarette.
Yes, correct. That's a real old term, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or we call them rags.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't smoke. I'm not smoking, like, you know.
Yeah.
But so she said, okay. She said, family history. And I only got into a small bit of family history with dad and a whole lot. And she put the hand out and she goes, I'll stop you there. She said, you're going for a CT angiogram. That's it. So went for that. And walked in, I'd kind of have the optimistic mindset, or try to anyway, with most things. And I walked in thinking, this is going to be a breeze. You know, nothing's going to happen. And then your man called me back in and he said, have a seat there. I said, grand, thank you. In his nice, swanky office. And he goes, what age are you again? And I looked at him as 37, thinking, this can't be good if he's asked me that. And he goes, you've multiple signs of heart disease in both sides of your heart. We need more tests. And I just looked at him and he went, you what now? You, both sides? He said, yeah. He said, you're in no immediate danger right now. He said, but there's things we have to do. So that was in the Hermitage. And I think maybe some part of in the back of my mind, then this kind of freaked me out a bit, because over the next while, I had to come back in the following week then for an MRI. But in between that week, things really escalated. And then I was feeding my daughter dinner. And again, heart palpitations were all there. And as I was giving her a bit of food, it's like someone lit a match or a lighter right under here, under my heart. And I just, and then it got a kind of a pain. I just looked at Mel and I said, we got to go. We got to go now. So we jumped into the car and went to Vincent's. And the rest, as I say, is history. They did an angiogram. They didn't waste too much time. They kept me overnight. And the first thing the next morning, said angiogram. And then the consultant said, he goes, yeah, he goes, you're not going anywhere else. He said, you're staying here tonight. He said, this time tomorrow, we'll have you back in here and we'll sort you out. 4 stents later.
And so what does the operation involve then? Like, stents are what? Explain it to us, I suppose.
So stents are, they're minute. Minute little wire mesh. Depending on whatever size, but on average, from about maybe an inch. And when they're putting that into your artery, it's like trying to, this is what, how they describe it. It's like trying to put a needle in through the center of a piece of cooked spaghetti. That's how delicate and the size of the dimension that you're dealing with. It can go in through your groin.
Oh, right.
Or in through your wrist.
So it travels up?
It goes up through your vein.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Because there's no pain.
And then it stops there then,
so
is it?
It goes up here and then it goes right into your heart. So there, wow, you're lying, you're awake.
Okay, so they don't actually go, the operation itself doesn't go anywhere near your heart.
Oh no, it does, it goes right into it.
No, the stent does, but the actual surgeons, whatever, don't operate on your heart.
No, they don't. They're actually behind a sort of a shield of sorts, and they've got like a joystick. There's a catheter that goes up through your vein.
Jesus, man.
You're
squinting here, yeah. It's good.
But you're lying there. So they give you a local anesthetic here in the wrist, so you don't feel that part. And you can feel something going up, but it's not, it's just more like, but it's not, there's no pain. But you are awake, and then the consultants are on where you are to me, that's on my right, because you guys can't see. And then I'm lying here, and then on to my left, there's 6 huge screens. And you can see your heart going, dum, 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 that kind of motion, and you can hear it.
Yeah.
And you can see where they're going, and they're taking pictures every couple of seconds. So they were taking pictures at the start to show where the blockages are. Okay, so imagine if you have a string of spaghetti there, and if it goes down and if it dips down like that, that's the part that's blocked. So it's like plaque.
Yeah.
On the inside. So if you have a tube, let's say, and then you get limescale that builds in.
Yeah.
So then the part where the water goes through, it narrows.
So I suppose my question is, how do they stop the stents in the area that they want to stop, or do the stents just stop themselves once they get to that blockage?
No, they have a reading. The catheter goes right down, and if it's, I can't remember exactly now, but if the width of it is either above or below a certain number, between the top of the artery and the bottom, and they can go right at the top and the bottom and take the reading, then they'll put a stent in if it's, you know, below a certain number.
Right. Okay.
So then the catheter puts it right down. So there's a balloon. Okay, inside the wire mesh, and the balloon goes in first, and then they expand the balloon, then, because that then opens up the artery, it pushes back the plaque,
yes,
or for want of a better word, and then it slips in the actual stent,
yeah,
and then it pulls the balloon back,
and it's locked in,
and then it's, that's it in there,
and
you get blood flow like you haven't had in years.
Are you serious? Yeah.
Oh yeah, I was the lads used to pull the piss out of me saying I suffered from tat.
What's tat?
So tired all the time.
Okay, right.
Right? Because no matter what I was doing, I'd be tired. You know, even though I was going running and everything else, working, we used to work two jobs on a regular basis, but permanently wrecked. And it was actually not that at all. It was heart disease. Because the blood wasn't getting pumped. It wasn't flowing. So then after the stents went in, every morning for the next probably good few months, I was waking up at about probably 5 a.m. and literally wide awake, which normally isn't the case, or wasn't the case anyway. So that was like a whole new breath of fresh air. And it took a while to get used to them, you know? It took a while to get used to them. It was very slow at the start, and you had to do small walks, maybe 2-3 times a day, and then build it up and build it up and build it up. But there was a lot of work done in there, and so there was a lot of bruising.
You 4 in total, is that right?
4 in total, yeah. But there's 2 major arteries on each side, and they're known as the widowmakers.
Wow.
For obvious reasons. If you have a blockage there and you don't get it sorted out, it's game over. So there's one in each of those, one really long, about 3 inches.
Wow, that's really long. Three inches.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's long because it needed a stent at the top of the artery and the bottom. Nice. But they just put one big long one in.
Jesus.
In the centre of it. So there's 4 there, and I probably need a 5th. There's another artery that's, I think it was about a year and a half ago, it was about 70% blocked, and then the last time I got it done, as in the angiogram to test, it's 82% blocked.
Jesus.
So it is getting progressively smaller and smaller and
smaller. So you'll have to get that done pretty quickly then, or soon, I should say.
Yes and no. They said that it's not a main artery, number one, and they said it's not going to cause an heart attack, number two.
Yeah, but it's still blocked. So,
yeah, but see, they'll only stent if they have to.
Okay.
Like 100% have to. Even if it's like 98%, they won't do it unless it's absolutely necessary.
And had you spoken to your dad or your family about this before? Like, how come you only got it checked at 36 or 37? Was it not kind of inevitable that, you know, you're going to get this, so you should have checked it all the way through every year, and maybe had some kind of preventive maintenance type.
You would think, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, I suppose that's men, isn't it, all over?
That is exactly it. Like, it's just, I'm bulletproof, you know. The alpha might have got it, but, you know, I'm still okay to do X, Y, or Z. Right. And at that stage, actually, remember, you just reminded me now, the last time the alpha was in one of the hospitals, I can't remember which it was, and he'd had a heart attack. And myself and the brother were in there, that we were about probably 10, 12 years ago. And the nurse came in and gave myself and the brother a sheet of paper and dad as well. And basically, so we all had to fill it in. Do you drink, do you smoke? What kind of foods do you eat? Exercise, diet, etc., etc. And she came back in and she just took it up and she just goes, that'll be you and you if you continue what you're doing. He said, that'll be you in 10 years' time.
And this was 12 years ago.
Yeah. And then I found that there was another thing that was said to me, that there was kind of a very loose rule of thumb mindset, that whatever, if your dad had heart issues, then chances are you'll experience them 10 years earlier.
Okay.
That's, I know, I don't know what the science is behind that, but I remember I was told that twice. And actually I was 11 years.
Wow.
He was 40. He was 46, I think it was. Yeah, I was 37. 11 years earlier.
So, obviously, that has had a huge impact on your life and how you
as he
drinks back a Guinness.
Yeah. Guinness.
Yeah. But you were saying that's your first beer in a long time, bar the wedding last week or whatever it was in Krakow.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I like my wine. I like my wine at the weekends, definitely.
Yeah.
I don't drink in zone normally, but.
So how is it? It obviously has fundamentally changed the way you live your life and the way you look at life, presumably.
Yeah, it does. I mean, let's be honest. If I call it, I've been very, very, very honest. I dodged a bullet, like.
And you had a daughter at the time, is that right?
Two.
Oh, you had two of them.
Yeah.
Sure, you're only talking about 4 years ago, aren't you? Three or 4 years ago. Yeah.
Nip two. I call them the nips. So nip two. Which is Elle. She was born in July 2015, and I had the stents put in on the 6th of January 2016.
Right.
So she's only a couple of months.
So that must have been a huge worry for your wife and for your family, I suppose.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't nice, no, let's be honest, you know?
And then, so how has it changed or shaped your your way of life and the way you approach life, because you're a full-time stay-at-home dad now. So you've, you've two kids. Mel works full-time. You work full-time as well as a full-time dad.
Yeah, it's the busiest job I've ever had.
Yeah, totally. So was the decision taken out of your hands?
To answer your question, yes and no. Like, I went back to work. I went back to the work in the sales job that I was in, but I wasn't able to do it properly.
Yeah.
And I was putting huge pressure on myself because I knew I wasn't selling, you know?
Mm.
And like when you're in sales, if you're selling, it's clear because your figures are there.
Yeah.
And when you're not selling, it's absolutely, you know, there's no hiding place.
Do you ever watch the movie Glengarry Glen Ross?
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it?
ABC.
Yeah.
Always
be closing.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
I saw it years and years ago.
Yeah.
Actually, I wouldn't mind watching it again, now you say it.
It's deadly. Anyway, sorry, go on.
But yeah, so I went back, and the idea was I didn't want to be just sitting around. I picked up a new hobby, and I was doing I was doing Airfix models.
Oh, right.
So I was sitting there with me seeds, walnuts that you were snacking on, and then I was trying to just taking it easy. Like, and yeah, you had to, because I wasn't able to.
And sorry, when you say seeds and walnuts, this was a new diet then you were on?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Because walnuts are particularly good for your cholesterol.
Right.
And seeds also have got numerous benefits towards a healthy heart.
Okay.
They don't taste great, if I'm honest. But yeah, they're good, like, from that point of view. So it was kind of like, I was just really trying to immerse myself into this new healthy lifestyle or healthier lifestyle. But I was getting seriously bored. Like, there's only so many Airfix models you can put together before you go, fuck this, like.
Yeah.
You know? So I went back to work, but I went back. I couldn't do it, like, because at that stage, it was for me then, so the work was done. But there was a lot of getting used to what was going on inside here. And I ended up going back into hospital in ambulance 3 or 4 times, thinking it was a heart attack. And it actually turned out to be a panic attack, which I'd never had before. I don't know if you ever had one, but they're horrible, horrible, horrible things.
I've never had one.
But they mimic.
Heart attack.
They mimic an awful lot of symptoms of a heart attack, yeah.
And what causes it?
The panic attack.
Yeah.
Well, see, it was kind of like a lot of it at that stage for me was probably, it was as much a mental game then as it was a physical game. So like I was kind of, and because I was sitting around doing nothing, I was kind of going, you know, why has this happened to me now? Where's, like, I'm too young for this shit. You know, I've got young kids. You're not taking me away this early, that kind of stuff, you know? So that kind of started playing on my mind. And then if something went a bit kind of beaten differently, which will happen when you've got stents in, especially when you've got 4 or more, because there's so much work done, there was a lot of bruising going on.
Yeah.
Like, the heart itself was actually bruised in many places, and that bruising then started to hurt. And when it was hurting, the heartbeat kind of went a bit irregular, and then that kind of freaked me out a bit. So then the head kicked in, and when the head kicked in, that's when I thought it was a heart attack. It was bloody scary, man. It really was scary. I remember my daughter was sitting at the top of the steps, Mia, that is. Thank you. And
sorry, I just passed us a beer, sorry. Yeah. That's why you're saying thank you.
Good man.
yeah, go on.
So, and I remember I thought I was going to have a heart attack at the bottom of the stairs, and I didn't want Mia to see me, but I didn't want to never see her again either, if that makes sense. It was a really hard one. And then, so I had to kind of, I remember being on the phone, and they make you take 4 aspirins,
to have blood.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. 4 aspirins straight away, but they stay on the call with you, which they're brilliant at what they do. You know, having rang them a few times more than I ever thought I would, but they were brilliant. But then this happened a few times, so I ended up back in and out of the hospital like a yo-yo for the first probably 3 months.
And come here, sorry to interrupt you, but you were saying that about Elle seeing you like that. Had you seen your dad like that at a young age too?
No, I didn't, because I was in school when I got the call that he was in the hospital.
Right.
So I missed all that. I missed the heart attack. I just got the call that your dad's in hospital.
Right.
So that I didn't actually see any of that. But it was just at that stage, like, it was just I was only dad maybe for 2-3 years, and then Elle was only a baba. I just didn't want them seeing it. You know, it was just a protective instinct that kicked in naturally, you know. Pardon me, but I also then didn't want to not see her, if that made sense, course, you know. Yeah, so, but thankfully, once you, but then when you get into the ambulance, like, they'll do all their checks, and they'll, you know, they'll see that certain things are elevated and certain things aren't, but then they can tell you straight away, okay, well, we can tell you it's not a heart attack, which is, at that stage, that's pretty reassuring words, trust yeah. me, to hear when you're in the back of an ambulance again. But then they bring you in, and, you know, more testing, you're kept over whatever period of time, and you actually relax then a bit. Mm. And then when you come back, then you're fine again. But unfortunately, it happened a few times. But that was just me getting used to the different rhythms and different, I suppose, the flow of the blood and what that kind of meant inside. And then after a while, it stopped. And then everything was, you know, happy days.
So do you still get panic attacks at all?
No.
No.
Thank you. Touch wood. Yeah. I had three or four around that time. And I've never had them since, thankfully.
Yeah.
But they're horrible things, man. Jesus, yeah. I never... Like, you just, yeah, you're losing, your heart rate goes up, you're lost, you lose your breath, you start shaking wildly. It's a crazy, crazy thing.
At what point then did you decide, right, I can't go on like this, I need to change my lifestyle, change my life, mm-hmm. and the fact that you had kids on board now, you made the decision, yourself and your wife, obviously it was a joint decision, it needed to be about quitting work and becoming a full-time stay-at-home dad.
Yeah. It was, I was in rehab. It was a cardiac rehab. And also, on a funny note, the combined age of the room must have been about 700.
I'd say you were the youngest.
Oh, by far. Yeah, by far. So when we were doing the running on the treadmill, I felt like fucking Superman, you know?
Yeah.
It was during that stage, that was a cardiac rehab program that lasted it was 8 weeks actually, and you had 2 days a week. But like, so half of it was education and the other half was fitness. So you used to go into the circuit room where they have X, Y, and Z equipment, you know? Pardon me. And the blood pressure was high. So they take the blood pressure at the start and the end of each session. And mine was sky high and they were going the way of medication and everything, that kind of stuff. But it was at the same time, because I was holding the back of my head and I knew I had to give up work, but I wasn't ready to pull the trigger. Because I loved the job, I really did, and I didn't want to. And then there's also the man thing, saying, oh, well, I have to bring in something, you know.
Yeah.
There has to be money of some sort coming in. So there was that to deal with too. I read a good report, what a stay-at-home dad's salary would be.
Right.
So based on, you know, going from A to B,
yeah.
Food, education, picking yeah. this X, Y, and Z up,
yeah.
It was about 45,000 to 47,000.
Right.
And I was thinking, that'll do.
Yeah.
You know, so that was my worth.
Yeah.
That was the value.
Yeah.
And in my head, that just released whatever kind of hang up I had before.
Gotcha.
That.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Because I was calculating, now, it was on the back of a napkin nearly, but like, you know, we have a childminder now, which is great. So it's cheaper than having the kids in a creche, three of them.
Yeah.
But I think in the 8 years that we've had kids, we've spent around 50 to 60 grand on childcare.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it?
Absolutely crazy.
Crazy money.
Crazy.
And like, obviously, to earn that, you're paying top rate tax, you have to earn double that.
Exactly.
Over double that.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, that's nearly 130, 135 grand.
Yeah, it's just mental.
For something after your kids.
Yeah.
It's fucking shocking.
And think about it. And like, think about it, if there was just some way to be able to save that money for your kids' future, you know, anyway, crazy. But we're going off topic slightly, but yeah.
Yeah, no, but you're right. And that was part of the thinking as well, because... Like it was at that stage I was in a startup, so my salary was dwarfed by Mel's salary anyway. So if we're going to make the decision purely on financial at that stage, the result would have been the exact same anyway.
Yeah.
But obviously this had the added kind of nugget of, you know, health behind it. Pardon me. So it just made sense. About a year and a half before that, we spoke about it, and I pushed back on the idea. I remember saying to Mel, "It's like, no way." It's like, I couldn't give up work.
Yeah.
You're mad, like. And looking back now, it was fear.
Mm.
It was fear because the realization that, especially because Elle was so young at that stage, that I would be 100%, you know, in charge of this little tiny human being all the time. and then a bigger version, it kind of freaked the tits out of me.
So it was it a fear of not being able to do the job correctly, or a fear of not knowing what to do, or was there also a fear of what will people think of a dad staying at home, mind the kids, or was that
that there? That part wasn't even an issue for me, right? I'm honest. Okay. Hasn't been since day one, still isn't.
Okay, good. Yeah,
but the first two,
yeah,
you know, am I going to do this right? What happens if I drop the baby?
Yeah,
you know, if something goes wrong over here while I'm over there, and then panic sets in and goes, what the hell do you do now, kind of thing. But after I, like, when I actually made the decision, two things happened over one weekend. There was a bath for Elle, and then I took Elle out, and I realised when I was drying her that I actually didn't dry her that much from the bath. It was normally Mel used to do it, whereas when me was young, I always did it. Well, we shared it. So that was one thing. I was thinking, why don't I do this? Well, more often anyway. And what was the second? Yeah, I used to go running with the girls in the buggy. And then Mia, we were in Dublin Zoo, and Mia was getting a bit bigger. And the weight on the buggy, she'd just gone past it, but she was knackered. So we took out Elle, the baba, put Mia into the buggy, and she looked so big in it. And then the realisation dawned on me that, I was like, shit, this time is gone already. Like, that part is now over. And then between the two of them, I just turned around to Mel and said, I'd be mad not to do this. Like, why would I not want to look after
you know,
my own kids?
It's something, and I'm going slightly off topic here, so apologies, but it's something I struggle with all the time, and I cannot get rid of it. It's just a habit. I enjoy my life fully. I have brilliant
good.
Time.
That's a good thing.
Right?
That's
I good absolutely start. Love it. And I love being with the kids. And I know they love being around me. And they love being around Dee, etc. Like, they love it. And we do some amazing things. And because of the blog and the way the stuff I write and all that, we get to do a lot of nice, cool things, review pieces and all that. So it's great. But I can't help but looking at the kids and going, shit. It's they're getting older, they're not going to be like this, it's nearly overpower, it's nearly taking over the not the enjoyment of having them this young, it's the I can't really explain it, it's the knowledge that it's not going to be like this again, or it's not going to be like this forever. Like, they're growing so quickly, and that takes away slightly from the enjoyment of it, because I'm thinking it's similar to and I've stopped doing this now, but I used to look at how long a movie would be, right?
Okay.
I'm going to say that again. I used to look at the way how long a movie would be.
I'm going to talk to you about that in
stammering and all that. But anyway, and then if I was enjoying a movie, I'd have a little look at my watch to see how long was left of the movie. And I'd be disappointed if I knew that there was only, say, 20 minutes left, or half an hour, or 40 minutes left. And I'd be nearly disappointed about watching the movie then, because I'd go, fuck, there's only half an hour left of that. Like, it's a habit. It's completely bonkers. But I do it all the time with the kids now. So the logic is
extended onto them.
Yeah, it drives me crazy. So that's why I take so many photos of them and so many videos of them, because I just want those memories to last. I know everyone says, oh, they're all in your head, but your memories don't always last.
I don't agree with that part of all in your head. I do agree with taking other photographs.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how many, like, we've thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of photographs.
Yeah.
And, like, it's easy in today's world with technology and everything. But, no, I agree 100% with that. The head part, the stuff I clearly remember when it happened at whatever time in the past, and I kept on saying, I'm definitely going to remember this. Well, it could be, like, you know, putting on the first new size jumpsuit or whatever, onesie.
Yeah.
But when it comes to a couple of years later,
yeah,
you don't remember. You don't, because
and then
there's been so much happening in the meantime.
Exactly. And I found, like, with the three boys, do you know what? That's one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, for starting to blog. Just to document the journey I have and the journey they have, and I'd love one day that if you know, they might look back if Facebook's still around or Instagram's still around or whatever, or my website's still around, and they can see how much, one, I enjoyed life, two, how much I enjoyed them, three, my sense of humor and what I liked, four, like the frailties and the insecurities, five, things when you're a bit sad or you're, you know, just everything really, just being a human being.
But it's like a movie of your life in the sense of since you became a dad and how everything kind of unfolded in on top of each other that made everything as beautiful as it is.
Yeah.
And as you said yourself, you know, it's not always good.
Yeah.
You know?
And the thing, like, just going back to the point about everyone says, oh, your memories are in your head. Like, Dee doesn't take many photos now at all, probably because she knows I take
you've
them.
Got the code.
And she says, oh, you should live in the moment. Your memories, you make memories in your head. And I said, well, I am living in the moment. Like, I'm absolutely loving this, but I'm taking a snapshot of this moment because
to preserve it.
And the thing about it is, I take videos all the time because, and I don't know if you followed my Facebook page or whatever, but
I do, I do.
Jackson, who's three, I call him Z German because he says mine all the time. So, like, mine socks, oh, Dad, I have to wipe mine bum, or can I have mine sandwich now? And the conversations I have are beautiful, and I record them. Because I will forget one day that's what he sounded like. No, not that's what he said.
What he's saying.
It's what he sounded like saying it, you know? And even now he's getting older and he's starting to change slightly, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it's the cutest thing ever. It's so funny.
Some of the stuff like that I remember, like, conversations I've had. Mia comes out with some crackers and you're in there and you're laughing your head off in the car going either to or from wherever you're going. And then he goes, definitely remember that later on,
because
it's so funny. And then by the time you're just chatting away and doing whatever, by the time you get back home, say, well, wait until you hear it, and it's like, balls.
And sometimes they say something and you won't ever hear them say it again, or if you ask them to say it again, it's not the same.
It's
different tone and all that, you know what I mean?
So
that you know what, and again, it's habit. It's I have to change my thinking about it, but it's, everyone always asks me what the hardest part of parenting is. And I genuinely, I know this sounds crazy, but I genuinely do not find parenting that hard because I enjoy it. I've always enjoyed kids. I've always gotten on well with kids. I have a kind of a Peter Pan type thing going on where I just enjoy it. I have a laugh. I love acting silly, etc. But
it's funny you use that Peter Pan. I'll come back to you on that in a sec.
But it's just this idea of, damn, you know, it's never going to be like this. And I posted something there on Facebook about, you know, for people who have older kids and what they wish they had known or they had done with, when their kids were young. And we can read out later or whatever. But some of the stuff is so regretful and remorseful, and there's a lot of sadness there.
And there's nothing you can do to change it now.
No, that's the really sad part. Yeah,
you know, that's it. It's done.
Yeah.
It's done. Like,
yeah.
No, I get it. I get it myself in the sense that, I think you've put it pretty well. Whereas, like, I wrote about it on one of the pieces I did, for one of the external companies I kind of write for every now and again, and it was just about the fact that once. I love seeing the development of the kids in terms of, you know, their looks, their personality, their, you know, education, their ability, let's say, to do a cartwheel now when they couldn't do it, whatever, a number of months back. And I love seeing all that side of it. And it's great for me because I'm in a very privileged position because I'm there all the time, you know.
Yeah.
Like, they're literally growing up right in front of my eyes.
Yeah.
But I'm very, very aware that time where they were that little bit younger, you know, in baby sort of sense, and first little mannerisms and things that they used to come out with, I'm very aware that part is now gone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's gone.
Yeah.
And
the only way you'll ever get that back is through videos and photos.
Yeah. And our blog and, you know.
Yeah.
It's, but that's, I mean, look, there's not much you can do about it, but, like,
that's life, you
that's
know?
It, exactly,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know. And, you know, you just start realizing that's probably what our own parents went through as well, you know.
But they they wouldn't have, like, they didn't have the chance to, you know, take loads of
document
videos,
document everything. Yeah, I know.
Well, unless they've got maybe old fashioned, like, sort of, you know, pen and
yeah,
ink and Ben Quill kind of job, you know.
So anyway, just so going back to your stint, so you made the decision then to be the stay-at-home dad. How is that going for you? Is it looking back now, is it the best decision you ever made, not necessarily for your health but for you? Are you glad you did it? Would you go back to full-time work? Because at some stage, you know, like, there's going to be a point in time when your kids don't need to be minded anymore. Yeah. Now I know it's a long way down the line, but
well, I don't know how. I mean, it's everything's gone by so fast. Yeah. You know, I don't know about if it's a long way away.
Right.
But it's by far, like, and I'm not just saying this, it's by far been the best move I've ever made. Yeah. And it's by far been how, ironically, getting probably the worst information in terms of health that I possibly could have gotten, because like, that's a serious illness, you know, how it actually turned out to be the best bit of bad news I've ever gotten.
Yeah.
Because it made me change. It made me look at the kids and go, yeah, I want to do this. Why would I not? And even when you said 40, 50, 60 grand for a childminder to look after, I'm thinking, to pay that much money, I have a chance to do this. Do it. So, yeah, it's been by far the best move. You know, and it's not to say that at times it's not, you know, the easiest. Mm. At times it can be quite tough. But the times it was quite tough, because a lot of people say that to me, particularly men in an older generation.
Mm.
They go, geez, it's really hard, doesn't it? It's minute compared to the benefits, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely minute. And so I was saying, don't, you know, lads, don't focus on the negative part of it. How about all the joy that you get from it?
Yeah.
The fun you get from it. The they teach me possibly way more than I teach them.
Yeah, and do you know what? It's funny. Like, so I suppose our parents and people of a different generation, say our dads, for instance, the traditional dad back then, went out to work, came home.
Caveman style.
Blah, blah. We saw our dad a lot. We had great fun with him on great holidays. But I was saying, going back to a post I popped up on Facebook about stuff you wish you had known or done when your kids were younger, the amount of people who reference work and say, I worked too much. Or I didn't focus enough time and attention with my kids, and I've kind of lost that bond nearly, like, you know what I mean? Because, and I always say about work, I said, if you're a smart person, regardless of whether you're educated, if you're smart or you have skills, you will always earn money. If you're savvy, you'll always earn money. And you'll
find a way.
Money will always come back. Time won't. You need to focus on what's really important for you. Now, I know that's easy to say, that there's a lot of people in different boats and they're living hand to mouth every day. So, you know, obviously there's issues there. But
you're not painting, you know, everyone's saying with the same brush.
No. Here's a question for you. So, does Mel cook at all? Can she cook?
She can cook, yeah. She can cook.
So even at weekends, no, it's you?
Most weekends, yeah.
And is that a decision that was made?
Yeah. I really enjoy cooking.
Okay.
I really, really enjoy cooking. And I'm handy enough.
Yeah.
Like, I make an awful lot of my food from scratch.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes back to, like, I don't sit there eating, you know, healthy food all the time.
Yeah.
Like I had a pizza every month, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a pizza and takeaway is kind of a maybe once a month job.
So you're having a fairly, in terms of health day, you're having a shit day, but a very good day in terms of Ross day. You're having pizza and beer.
Pizza and beer, yeah.
And there's some Jaffa cakes here as well, if you want some.
I haven't decided to give them any attention yet, but
Because I'm the opposite. I hate cooking.
You don't? And do you cook at all?
I do cook. And I always say, and it drives Dee mad, I said, you don't need to be able to cook. You need to be able to read. You need to be able to read a recipe from a book, and then you can cook anything you want. Right? So, and she goes, oh, you can't. But I do make stuff from scratch myself. I like the fact that the kids might turn around and go, oh, I love this, Dad. I love this. It's great. But I still get zero enjoyment out of it. Like, Dee's mom got me one pot cook type book thing from Delia Smith or one of the, no, not Delia Smith, what's her name? Rachel Allen or, no,
yeah,
the other one.
Yeah, Dory Allen, isn't it?
Yeah, whatever. The problem with it is, it's one pot to cook it, but it's about 20 fucking other things that I would chop up and prepare. And that's my problem. I go, well, yeah, I still have to do all the washing up and the shit like that, you know what I mean? That's what I hate about it. You know?
Well, yeah, I'm not fond of washing up or any that kind of stuff, but I enjoy cooking, I enjoy the prepping, I enjoy figuring out what goes with what, kind of, you know, what herbs and spices complement X, Y, or Z, and I enjoy that.
I absolutely hate that.
Yeah.
I hate it. You know, I get no buzz from that at all.
Well, Mel would be the same now. She's not, she can cook, but she detests.
From talking to you previously about Mel and that, and I haven't met Ross's wife yet, and hence it's always strange calling her Mel when I haven't met her. But she sounds, or herself and myself sound very similar.
Very similar. Very, very, very. And I've said this to
I her. Have moves as well, so yeah. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, no, I said this to Mel earlier on, a few lines. I was thinking, I said, you're very, very on the same page with a lot of different things, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a cool, funny thing because it's in the sense that you haven't actually met each other yet,
which is
what I said. But yeah, your minds both think a hell of a lot.
Mm.
She doesn't sleep that much.
Mm.
You're similar from what you told me.
Yeah.
And if there's something on your mind, if you're trying to sleep or not, you're not, there's no chance you're sleeping.
No chance.
Like, I've woken up in the middle of the night and Mel is there scribbling down stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or she's on the phone, or she's working away doing something, because she just can't, until she actually articulates it down on something.
Yeah.
She won't sleep. Whereas I'd sleep standing up.
Yeah, I know. I don't. I probably sleep five hours a night, and in those 5 hours, we checked. Excuse me, on Fitbit, I'd be waking up 16 to 18 times in that period. So.
And that's not a long period.
No, it's not.
Like, it's not.
But now. I do go to bed sometimes thinking all the time, and I'd stay up then and I'd write things. I write an awful lot. Like the stuff I don't post on social media, you'd be amazed, like, you know what I mean? I have just journals and journals of stuff, and I've turned that into.
And what stops you? Like what's if you're writing it down, what actually pulls you back from saying no, I'm actually not gonna post that?
Because well, it's nothing really. It's just I don't want to overpost, because I don't want to be seen as someone who just
bombards and
spams.
Going.
I miss it to meet Mel sometime. Like, it'd be good.
Yeah. It'd be like looking at yourself, just slightly different. I have to say now, don't take this offense, but like she's slightly better looking version.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. And that's the podcast finished.
Yeah.